Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back. CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds, leaky black. Ion College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button. Be Brandon Davies. You have consent. Don't forget why you're here. Also, if you haven't already, subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. It's the best way to make sure you see an every episode right when we're doing it. Let's get into it. Purdue, UConn, and Houston, you might have heard, all won this weekend. So they are all, incredibly, 28-3, outright league champs heading into their conference tournaments. And they're all now guaranteed, safe to say this now, to be number one seeds in the NCAA tournament, regardless of what happens between now and Selection Sunday. The only question is which one will be the number one overall seed. And I promise we're not going to spend barely any time on that today, because there's nothing really new to say about these teams. They're clearly the three best teams in the country. They're all excellent. They're all reasonable picks to win the 2024 NCAA tournament. Here's the only thing I want to ask you, Deadleg, before we move on to what we're actually going to discuss here. And that's that, you know, we're 1 week away from Selection Sunday. And right now, the selection committee would tell you that Purdue should be the number one overall seed, at least according to Jerry Palm and most other notable bracket projectors in this moment. Right. Meantime, the betting markets have UConn as the favorite to win the 2024 NCAA tournament. And nearly every computer, including the net, KenPom, Bart Torvik, have Houston number one. How unusual is this? 1 week from Selection Sunday, there are three teams with nearly identical bodies of work. You can reasonably rank them in any order right now. Purdue, UConn, Houston. Houston, Purdue, UConn. UConn, Houston, Purdue. Put them in any order, and you can make your case easily. Do you have a sense for how unusual this is?
I think it's pretty unusual. It's unusual to have a situation where the number one overall seed really doesn't mean anything, because those things have already been predetermined in terms of these teams are going to certain regions. So picking where you want to go, that's unusual. And then the idea that you would have a resume that's in first place right now, which isn't a lock for Purdue, but a resume that's in first place, a betting market leader in UConn, which has been the case for weeks. And then usually that will align with what the predictives and the analytics will say. And that's not happening yet with Houston. I do wonder if that changes if Houston wins the Big 12 tournament. Keep an eye on that. Put an pin in it. We'll come back on our Selection Sunday show in 1 week. Yeah, that's right, folks. 1 week to the bracket. 1 week from when you're listening to this podcast, we will have a bracket. You will know the matchups there. So it is really unusual. I can't give you specific years where this might have been the case. Frankly, it feels like if it's ever happened, not only can you count it on one hand, you might be able to count it on two fingers. It just doesn't seem like this would have happened all that often. So it's a fun, quirky little plot twist here. And I would say it will lead us into the tournament having a lot of different picks for the one line to win it all. But I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think a lot of people are going to fade Purdue, and you will get more people picking Houston and UConn than you will Purdue.
I think that's probably true. Real quick, and then we'll move on. The case for Purdue right now would be that the Boilermakers, after their regular season finale victory earlier on Sunday, they now have 9 wins over schools ranked in the top 25 of the net. That's 2 more than anybody else. They're 19-3 in the first two quadrants. That's tops in the nation. UConn's 18-3, Houston's 17-3. Purdue is also number one in strength of record. You want to make your case for Purdue? Use what I just said. For UConn, it's pretty simple. They're the favorites in the betting markets to win the 2024 NCAA tournament, and nobody beats the crap out of other people as consistently as UConn does. They're in possession, I believe I read this somewhere, of more 20-point victories than anybody else in the sport. Then there's Houston. Case for Houston, they're number one in most computers, including the net. They're also in possession of 13 quadrant one wins. That's two more than anybody else. Oh, they also just won the toughest league in the country by multiple games. Put them in any order, it really doesn't matter at this point, but it is wild how close the resumes are and how the bracketologist, betting markets, and predictive metrics all think of these teams slightly differently. One likes one, the other likes the other, the other likes the other. Okay, let's talk fourth number one seed. Jerry Palm, our colleague, says it's still Tennessee after the Vols lost their regular season finale at home to Kentucky. I would personally go with North Carolina as the fourth number one seed right now, but it's close. Where would you go?
All right, let's talk. So let's talk resumes here, and then let's talk the games a little bit before we get out of this break to the next block here. So resumes, and I'm going to bring in Arizona as well, even though it's no longer in the conversation. But if you were unaware,
I think Arizona is a part of the conversation.
I don't think Arizona has a chance at the one seed anymore. So here's why. I think it's gone because it has losses on the resume. Arizona took a loss at USC over the weekend. And in doing so, it's now lost to Stanford, not going to the tournament, Oregon State, not going to the tournament, USC, not going to the tournament, got swept by Wazoo. And it's the only team with a quad three loss. And it is 11th. It's all the way down at 11 in strength of record, which will be looked at in the committee room. Tennessee and Carolina aren't that far down. Now, if Arizona won the Pac-12 tournament, and then unlikely as it is, you saw Tennessee and UNC both lose their first league tournament games, I'd be open to have the conversation. I won't say 0% GP. I just don't think it is a three-team race anymore. I think it might be a two-team. That's my thought on Zona. So you know what? Before I give you the resume stuff with Carolina and Tennessee, why do you think this should still be a three-team race for that final one seed?
I actually think it's more than three for that final one seed, but I would have Arizona on the list. They're 14-6 in the first two quadrants. I think of all the teams, whether it's two, three, or six, however many teams we're looking at for the fourth number one seed, I don't think anybody's going to be better than 14-6 in the first two quadrants. They have eight quadrant one wins. That is more, nobody in contention for the fourth number one seed has more than that right now, except for Baylor. Baylor has nine, if we're even still considering Baylor a part of this, and that's a stretch, but I think you have to. The problem for Arizona is exactly what you said. They've got four losses outside of quadrant one, including the quadrant three loss to Oregon State. Most of these other teams that are in contention for the fourth number one, like Iowa State, has one loss outside of quadrant one. Marquette, one loss outside of quadrant one. Baylor, only one loss outside of quadrant one. Arizona's got four, including the quadrant three. I think if you end up being right, and I think you will be, and this is not something I thought I'd be saying yesterday, because literally yesterday I said, I don't think Arizona's losing again the rest of the season. And I think these other teams probably will, the Tennessees, the Iowa States.
Right.
And I think Arizona's going to be the fourth number one seed. Then they just, you know, they mess that up. Lose to USC. I still think there's a chance. I don't think they'll be the fourth number one seed, but if they ran through the Pac-12 tournament and say Tennessee lost, North Carolina lost early, I could at least imagine it.
If you are listening to the pod, our current YouTube poll question is who our viewers think will wind up with the final one, and it's just between Carolina and Tennessee. I will get to those results before we obviously get to the end of the show, if not to the end of the next segment there. Here's the resume with Tennessee and Carolina, and it got more interesting. So you've got Carolina as the one, Palm as Tennessee as the one. I'll tell you mine once I read these resumes. And I do, again, want to get to a little bit of the game because there's stuff to talk about there too. Carolina. Net ranking 7, strength of record, it's top 4. KPI, which is resume-based, no predictive, it's 5. KenPom, 8. BPI, 11. 7-4 in quad 1, 6-2 in quad 2. It has 8 road wins. Road victories are sometimes an overlooked statistic. It absolutely means something very significant when it comes to teams getting in the tournament and fighting for one seed line. So 8 right now for Carolina. Non-con strength of schedule is 23. Overall strength of schedule is 25. Has the home win against Tennessee. Now, here's where I hope the committee really pays attention to his stuff, because if you watch that game, Tennessee closed the gap late, and yes, Carolina had it on his home floor, waxed them, no doubt about it. those two teams play that night on a neutral floor, I still think Carolina beats Tennessee that night. And I almost wonder if that's the clincher there. Carolina also has a vital sweep of Duke. It is a standalone regular season champ. It has a road win against Virginia. And right now, in my opinion, UNC is either looking at the one in the West or the two in the East. Now, the two in the East would mean you're with UConn. I think you got to be chasing that one in the West, even though you got to fly across the country. Tennessee's resume right now, net is 5-2 spots better than Carolina. Strength of record is 5-1 spot worse than Carolina. KPI is 3-2 spots better than Carolina. KenPom, 5-3 better than Carolina. BPI, 5-6 better than Carolina. Quad 1, 7-6. That's worse than UNC with more chances in Quad 1. Quad 2, it's 6-1. It's better than Carolina with one fewer game. Also has 8 road wins. Non-con strength of schedule is 16. Remember, Carolina's 23. Overall, SOS is 9-9 versus Carolina's 25. It's got a win at Wisconsin. It beat Illinois. It has a sweep of Alabama, has a win at Kentucky, has a win at South Carolina. It's looking at either a 1 in the West or a 2 in the South. Right now, tonight, you make me bracket this thing, GP. I'm giving it to Carolina because of the home win over Tennessee as the tiebreaker.
I will tell you, if I were arguing against us, because I didn't know whether we would agree on this or not, but if I were arguing against us, the place to start is that the resumes are very similar. Like you framed it one way. Another way to do it would just be North Carolina's 13-6 in the first two quadrants with 7 quadrant one wins. Tennessee 13-7 first two quadrants with 7 quadrant one wins. So Tennessee's got the one more loss, but here's the difference. They have 6 wins against teams in the top 25 of the net. Carolina only has 3. And so they have twice as many, but Carolina's got a convincing one over them. And when the resumes are this similar, and I understand that the game was played in Chapel Hill, not Knoxville. And if it had played in Knoxville instead of Chapel Hill, the result might have been the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. But when the resumes are so similar, I do kind of want to look at, hey, have these teams played and what happened when they did? And Carolina, you know, won that game convincingly. I'm not saying that should be the tiebreaker. I'm just saying when it's very, 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 very close, you can sort of look to something like that. And I think these are close enough where you can start to look at something like
if
that.
If it's that close, if it's really that close and you're splitting hairs, I want the head-to-head to be the data point. Let it be the tiebreaker, you know? And I'm not saying that it always is in the committee room, but if it was to be, that wouldn't surprise me there. You can very much make the case Tennessee should still be on the one line. I would narrowly lean Carolina right now with what I just gave you there. And there will even be, for everything I laid out, I try and do it as streamlined as possible. Trust me, the discussion will actually be even more nuanced, as it should be, and more granular in the committee room if indeed we get to a situation where those teams kind of are going neck and neck there. I would put them pretty comfortably ahead of Arizona. I don't think Arizona, like, I do think it's going to come down to what I, again, it will be more granular there, but the fact that it's going to have, like, you're going to get there, GP, and they're going to have more bad losses. They're going to have the only one probably with the Q3 on the board there. I just don't think it can overcome that. Overall record wise as well right now, what do we have here? So Carolina's what, at 6 losses? Arizona and Tennessee are both at 7, I think. Again, if you're splitting hairs there, you know, Carolina narrowly has a better record, but Tennessee narrowly played a tougher strength of schedule. So you and I would both pick Carolina. How about this though? To our poll question, the poll question is, who wouldn't you have now? It's who you think will get it. I think it'll be Tennessee. I think Tennessee will win this race. I give me UNC coming around the final bend right now, but I actually think Tennessee will play well in the SEC tournament, win out, and that it will be the one in the West, and you'll see Carolina be at the 2 in the East.
Obviously, that could happen. I would still lean toward North Carolina, if only because I think it's easier to win the ACC tournament than it is the SEC tournament.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I just think though that Tennessee is going to have to play more good teams on their way to winning an SEC tournament than North Carolina is going to have to play on their way to winning an ACC tournament. How about this? If they both went out, it'll be Tennessee. Mm-hmm. My prediction is that Tennessee doesn't win out, Carolina does, and it's Carolina.
All right, good deal. Let's talk
just, real quick, right. and then I'm just going to name. I'm not going to go through them because I don't think these teams are going to be in play. But just so a fan base isn't like, what about us?
All right.
I actually think North Carolina, Tennessee, Arizona, Iowa State, Creighton, Marquette, Baylor.
Man, you think all of them are still in the running?
Now, just like, I mean, if we're putting it 1% chance, like just if it, everything broke the right way for them and then all these other teams like took losses, could it theoretically happen? The thing with Marquette, you got to remember, What if they run through the Big East tournament? They're 13-8 in the first two quadrants right now with eight quadrant one wins. They only have one loss outside of quadrant one. What if they ran, won the Big East tournament, right, like on the way there, beat Creighton, beat UConn? I haven't looked at the bracket that closely to even see if that's
what they would do.
Okay.
And we're going to get brackets later in the show, by the way.
And then the committee looks at it and goes, okay, they got those eight losses, but like some of them are without Tyler Kolick and he's back now. I wouldn't rule it out. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Don't rule it out. Man, that would be fun. I like that we got a good little race here for the final one seed. Yeah. Again, this is going to develop as we move along. Let's go to Durham here. Carolina, let's just talk game real quick. It gets its first outright ACC regular season title since 2017. Before we get to the game, actually, right off the top. Nada, if you have it, we are giving love and shine to the man who did so for this podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome inside Cameron. These two programs really are so close in so many ways as the crow flies, separated by less than 9 miles, about 11 miles with more conventional modes of transportation. Just one game separates them in the ACC standings. Joe Lunardi's got them both on the two line. It's the 50th top 10 matchup, and it's 25-24 Duke all time. So much good stuff in this rivalry.
There we go.
Dan Shulman, the legend.
Cormac Ryan had 31 points, a career high, 21 in the second half. Duke this season has only allowed 84-plus points in two games. They were both against UNC. This is a wild nugget here with Cormac Ryan, and credit to Steve Kirshner of UNC. So his 31 points were the most by a Tar Heel against Duke since Anton Jameson had 35 in Chapel Hill in 98, but he had 35 in Chapel Hill in 98. The last time a Tar Heel got as many as 31 in Durham was his coach, Hubert Davis, in 92 when Hubert went in to Cameron and got 35. I think he's also the last time a Carolina player had six triples in a game. Where the hell did this come from, Parrish? I mean, it's super impressive. Reminder, I put Carolina win straight up on the podcast on Friday. NBD, it's all good. And yeah, UNC, because of that, is still in high command for a one seed chase here. Defense and rebounding, and defense even with Duke scoring 79. I was super impressed by UNC, which did not come to mess around whatsoever. And somehow, some way, although I'm going to mention right now, somehow, some way, we had a Duke tripping incident that did not take over the sport this weekend. Kyle Filipowski, apparently unknowingly, I know, take your sides, dig in, all good, tripped up Harrison Ingram, and it was almost a moment. But that was like that seventh plot line in this game, which is kind of wild to think about.
He hasn't really helped his reputation over the past couple of weeks.
He is not. No.
Like, I was willing to fight for him when it was like, yo, you might have just taken a first round pick and broke his leg in a court storming. All right. But then you limp off like you can barely walk. And you got me going, you might have hurt this guy. I don't know, but you might have hurt this guy. Then he comes back next game, no problem. And then, you know, he doesn't answer the questions immediately after the court storm very well. And then this thing, I mean, that. I guess I can't prove it wasn't an accident, but it didn't look like an accident to me. Did it look like an accident to you?
No, it did not. No, it did not.
But he said it was.
He did say it
was. I'm just starting to wonder if I can believe this guy, anything he says. He says he can't walk, and then he's windmill dunking 3 days later. He says he didn't mean to trip anybody, but sure as hell looks like he did. I'm starting to wonder if I can believe anything this guy says. I don't know if I trust him.
Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
I don't know if I can trust him. This Filipowski. I don't know if he tells the truth all the time.
Any less confidence in Duke moving forward, GP?
Any less confident than what?
Like, I don't know. Did you think Duke was a Final Four team before this game? Nope. And after it couldn't get the job done in a big spot against its hated rival and let Armando Bacot and RJ Davis come in there for the second time in their career and notch a pretty significant win?
And they reduced John Shire. Did you see this? Poor John Shire's walking around apologizing to students. Did you see this? Yeah.
Not only that, and for those listening, I even locked down Leaky Black. A little shout out for Leaky with Carolina winning. Shire's doing that at the same time that Carolina players, as they should, you know, Blake Hinson, credit to him because he did this early in the season, and you knew if Carolina won this game, it was going to not jump on the table, but they start talking smack. And then Duke, the crazies, start throwing water bottles and trash on the court. Shire has no idea this is happening. He's apologizing to the crazies on the other end of the floor. It was a wild scene. And for the Duke haters, between the Filipowski trip and then throwing trash on the floor after all the, you know, hubbub was made about the court storm. Yeah, it was a wild scene there on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's obviously unacceptable. I saw some people like, are you going to criticize the Duke students? like you did the Wake Forest students. By the way, I never actually criticized the Wake Forest students. I just said, if you want to stop this, here's how you do it. You just say, if you run on the court, you will be cited, period. I never said cite the Wake Forest students that ran on the court because we don't have those rules in place yet. I'm saying make it clear and then do it. But I never said you should do anything to any Wake Forest student who ran on that court a few weeks ago. And it's like, oh, what are you going to say about the Duke? What do you want me to say about the Duke students? Like, in what world do you think I'm going to say, oh, I don't mind. They should be throwing bottles and shit at the Carolina players.
All right, like, what? Yep. Explicit. Like, here we go. All right.
Like, what are we talking about? Like, of course they're wrong to do that. It's embarrassing and shameful. And you know, they deserve all the criticism they get for that. And poor John Shire having to walk. Can you imagine you just lose to your rival and then you got to walk around and like apologize to students who are like have their bodies painted blue? I just had never seen that before. Yeah. Can you imagine Kelvin Sampson walking over to the Houston student section being like, I'm sorry we lost this game to Kansas. I just never seen that.
Well, I mean, the juxtaposition between Shire going over and kind of saying, like, I'm sorry, like, we're going to get better. Like, you know, I understand this is unacceptable versus Kay 2 years ago, literally chastising the crowd saying, this is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. I love Duke. It's unacceptable. So that was also a crazy juxtaposition between the two. And yeah, it's a tough loss. No doubt about it. I mean, season, they didn't lose a game at home. They win the ACC year two. They get beat by, you know, they lose multiple games at home and lose to Carolina. They lose on chance on winning the ACC regular season. Season's far from over, but if you want to be tapping the brakes on Duke a little bit because of this, I'd understand.
Yeah. It's like what I said, I believe within the past week, you know, I'll never rule it out because they've got great players and, yeah, you know, great players tend to do well in the NCAA tournament, but Duke has never cracked the great conversation. Not one time this year. We've been talking about greatness and like it's always Houston, Purdue, UConn, and then maybe it's North Carolina for a minute. And watch out. Perhaps it's Kentucky for a minute. And oh, wow, look at Iowa State. They ain't going away. Duke's never been a part of that conversation in any sort of real way. I mean, we're more than four months into this thing.
That's true. And it's been a tier below. But you know what? You got Cooper Flagg and just a loaded class coming next year. So a lot of those expectations will be heavy going. And we'll save that, obviously, for down the road. I do want to mention this. This is also just an outstanding nugget here from Kirshner. In the last 20 years, Carolina has played Duke 9 times in the regular season finale. And in those situations when the Tar Heels needed a win to either claim an outright ACC championship or ensure a share of it. So 9 times in the past 20 years, Carolina has gone into a Duke game knowing it needed to win to have some sort of claim on an ACC championship in the regular season. Every single time that has happened, Carolina has beat Duke. That's incredible. Frankly, the facts and stats and situations when it comes to this rivalry are, you know, they're heavily leaning in Carolina's favor as of late. And by the way, as not a noted in our messaging, Krzyzewski was in the building for this as well. I mean, goodness, he goes like 2 games a year. I feel like almost everyone, I think they won the game against Notre Dame when it was Bray's last game. So at least he got that one, but tough scene all around.
It is a tough scene all around. Does that lock it up? Hubert Davis, ACC Coach of the Year? I would give it to him.
There's no other option at this point. There's no other option. We're running long here. Let's get quickly Kentucky, Tennessee. It's amazing to me, truly amazing to me, that, and I said this on HQ Saturday night, if you told Tennessee fans, Connect's going for 40 against Kentucky, they're going 15-point win, 20-point win? No. 85-81, Kentucky goes into Knoxville. I didn't realize this going into the game. Tennessee had won 12 straight home games against AP-ranked teams at Thompson Bowling. That was the longest streak in the history of the SEC, Parrish. Reed Shepard, our voting will happen later this year in this season, but I'm in the USBWA, and voting is due by the end of Sunday night, so we have to give our first team. And I put Reed Shepard National Freshman of the Year.
I turned in my ballot today. And he was my vote for National Freshman of the Year.
He is the first of all, his shooting is a joke, man. The idea that you have a freshman that is a 52.6% 3-point shooter going into postseason is an outrage. Okay. It's not like he's taking 2 a game. He's about 5 a game at this point, and he is the first Division I freshman to average better than 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 2 made threes a game since Jay Williams did it in 1990-2000, man. Unbelievable what he does. And it wasn't just him, but between him and then Reeves goes for more than 20 again, and they had it. This was extremely impressive by Kentucky. They almost gave it away late. I get it. There was a 10-second call, and there were a couple spots there where they were kind of getting lemon booty. I get all that, but they go in and they get a win, and they jump to the four line because of this, as far as I'm concerned, and they are able to overcome. They basically, like, connect, goes nuts. He gets half his team's points, but they kind of went around it. Very impressive for Kentucky. They did, to me, they won a race. They got to 85, and they can't do this four games in the tournament, I don't think. But here's the, I'm telling you, even if they don't win the SEC tournament, if Kentucky gets to like the final, they are going to be the trendiest team below the three line, thinking that they wouldn't be a three in that situation. Maybe they will be, to be picked to make the Final Four or title game, because it's just so obvious. They're so fun to watch play. Dillingham, in addition to Reeves's, you know, reliability, they just, you know, there's a lot there, and it was hard not to be extremely impressed with Kentucky going into the spot where very few people thought it would win.
I don't want to say they could lose in the round of 64, although I know it's possible, but I don't think they will. I could see them losing in the round of 32 or winning the national championship, anything in between, any of it I could envision, because they're so talented and so awesome offensively that they are capable of beating anybody on any given day, because they can out-talent anybody on any given day. It's just that they have never been consistent with it. Obviously playing well now, but they've never been consistent with it. Top 25 and one, I got Kentucky 17th right now. You said they jumped up to a four seed with this win, which suggests we were probably have them right in the same page, same range rather. Kentucky fans were bothered, and I get it. I anticipated it. I didn't move them up. They go and win at Tennessee, and I didn't move them up. And they're like, how could you not move us up after a win at Tennessee? The simple answer is I looked at everybody above you and didn't think you belonged ahead of anybody above you. There are like six other teams in the top 25 and one that won on Saturday and also didn't move up. So it's not unique to Kentucky. I just look at, I'm just slotting teams based on resumes mostly. And UK, even after that big win, is now 8-7 in the first two quadrants, six quadrant one wins, three losses outside of quadrant one, including that Q3 loss to Wilmington. They're also, this is the part that's like wild to me. I mean, you should see my mentions. Kentucky fans think it's the craziest thing in the world to have Kentucky 17th. They're 16th at KPI, 17th at KenPom, 19th in the net, 20th BPI, 20th at Torvik. They're right in the,
yeah.
I mean, what do we talk? I don't even know what we're arguing about. But hey, they looked great on Saturday, and they've looked great more often than not lately. And if we are talking about them in Glendale, Arizona, as one of the four last teams remaining, that won't surprise me at all. But they have done so much damage to their resume that they're never going to be able to be seated now where their talent suggests that they should be, or where that win on Saturday at Tennessee suggests they should be.
Poll results are in. Again, this is projection. Readers, viewers agree with you, GP. Right now, predicting Carolina 68%, Tennessee 32%. Who will be the one seed when we get to Selection Sunday?
Partners? I think it's time for a word for a partners.
Partners. Bring it.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Okay, Deadleg, I think I'm right. I think I've been on the move all day, but I think I'm right. I think we have four teams in the NCAA tournament via auto bids already right now. Is that right?
That is correct. You got them, or you want me to read them off?
I you know what? I think I'd like to, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Just making sure you got, literally making sure you have them. If you don't, I have them.
So. I appreciate you trying to cover for me, but I do actually have some. Atlantic Sun, that's Stetson. Congrats to Stetson.
Jalen Blackman, 43 in the title game. He set a conference record. 34 came in the second half, man. It's outrageous. A son, good on you. Awesome game, Parrish.
Big South, Longwood.
Longwood.
The Longwood Longwoods. Remember them?
More of us, for sure. Went D1 in 2004. This is the second time they've been to the dance.
I also went D1 in 2004.
There we go. Under Griff Aldrich, they made it a couple of years ago. Beat UNC Asheville in the Big South title game. That's another top seed that got knocked off. Yes.
In the MVC, it's Drake. So we have, you ready for this? Drake and Longwood.
And another Moorhead. Moorhead out of the Saturday night OVC. Did you just...
Drake, Longwood, and Moorhead. Drake, yes. And Longwood went viral together like 3 weeks ago. So this is like a match made in heaven.
If you say so. Congrats.
Match made in heaven.
Congrats to Moorhead State. Probably going to be on the 15 line. Beat Little Rock. Another top seed in the OVC Saturday night. Kevin Harlan on the Valley every year, man. Come on now. Just great, great, great stuff. Drake, this was his fourth straight MVC championship game. It's won 10 of its last 11. Drake, how about this? So Drake is going to make back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances for the first time in a long time. Do you know the last time the streak began when Drake made back-to-back NCAA tournaments?
Well, of course I do.
Give it to me.
1983-84.
They made three from 69, 70 to 71. They're in back-to-back dances here. It's their third time as a member of the Missouri Valley. 08, 23, 24. What song was that, Parrish? What song was that?
Well, that was Hotel California.
There we go. Okay, never know. Yeah, get a little taste. Name that tune.
Okay. We're about to find out something about you. Eagles in negotiations to do a residency at the Sphere. Would you see the Eagles at the Sphere?
Coincidentally enough, my mother is in Chicago right now. She just saw the Eagles Friday night at the United Center, I believe. I would not see the Eagles at the Sphere. The Eagles are also my father's favorite band. He would absolutely see the Eagles. It's actually, and by the way, it is just whatever, pedantic, but technically for the band, it's just Eagles. They aren't the Eagles. They're branded and stylized as just Eagles. So I would not see Eagles at the Sphere.
Nobody says I'm going to see Eagles.
No one says it. I know, but it's just, did you know they brand themselves as Eagles, not the Eagles? Why? I don't know. Who the hell knows?
The Astros are the Astros, but we say we're going to see the Astros. We don't say I'm going to see Astros.
Well, listen, I'm convinced that the stylization and not including the and the band name was the central point to them having fights so many times over the years and eventually breaking up. There we go.
Do you think the Big Lebowski harmed the Eagles' legacy because the dude hated them?
I hate the effing Eagles, man. Oh, what a relatable line. No, if anything, I think he helped them even more. Yeah. I mean, they had that Hell Freezes Over tour back in
the '94. I attended the Hell Freezes Over tour at the Pyramid while I was in high school. Pyramid now, of course, is a Bass Pro. It's the Bass Pro Pyramid. But once upon a time, they played basketball games in there and had concerts. And I attended the Hell Freezes Over tour.
Good on you. We were going somewhere. Well, I hit that.
That'll do it. That's all it takes.
Okay. Drake, great to see you in. Awesome game. Awesome performance. Tucker DeVries. And if you watch the game, not only was it amazing to watch, Indiana State came from a huge deficit, made a 16-1 run. They couldn't pull off the ups, or they couldn't pull off the come from behind win. Another top seed that is lost in its conference championship and tournament that's happening all over the place. Right when we went live, 10 seed at Sacramento State knocked off Eastern Washington, the biggest sky. Yeah. All these teams are not going to the NIT this year. This is another, like, they got all these teams that won their regular season. Like, no mid-majors are going to be in the NIT because they all keep losing in their conference tournaments. It's outrageous. Indiana State, let's talk on this. I think we got this in the poll. I don't know if you've looked at the resume yet. This is going to be one of the most debated teams in terms of getting into the field. Should it? Will it? Does it deserve it? I'll say this, Parrish. You know me on this pod. I'll bang the table pretty hard for mid-majors and their inclusion, particularly when you stack them up against high majors and opportunities. And I might get there again with the Sycamores, but I looked at it. I'm not all the way in. Now, do I think that Indiana State would be fun as hell in the tournament? Absolutely. Do I think the tournament would be bettered by having the Sycamores in and going to Dayton? You bet your ass I do. No doubt about it. But right now, I'm not there yet. Now, maybe I can get there. And trust me, we got a lot. We're going to get to our bubble winners and losers in a second. And there were a lot of teams that lost that were bubble teams over the weekend and took L's. There were many more losers than bubble winners. But for Indiana State right now, let me bring this up here. It's 20. So this is per Torvik's team sheet ranks. 26th in the net, 34th in strength of record, 39 KPI, 41 KenPom, 39 BPI. 1-4 in quad one, 4-1 in quad two, 5-5 in the top two quadrants. It's 12-1 in quad four. So it has more quad four games, period, and this is a function of its conference, I get that, than any other bubble team in the discussion. Like, it's got 13 quad four games and it's 12-1. If you're wondering about the one, it's the home loss to Illinois State. But I will say this. If you do wins above bubble at Torvik right now, I'm going to refresh this in real time here. Indiana State is 26. And in my opinion, if you're a top 30 wins above bubble team, you should be auto-included just to be in the discussion. Not get in, be in the discussion. Wins above bubble, how well you did relative to your schedule versus the average bubble team. Indiana State right now ranks ahead of San Diego State, Washington State. Drake is 29. FAU, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Texas, Clemson, Florida, Oklahoma, Virginia, Boise State, Colorado State, all these teams are easily in. That's an objective, pragmatic metric. Keep that in mind. But I'm not there yet. Where do you land on if Indiana State should be in the field as of, say, tonight?
I don't think it's a no-brainer. I don't believe, like, this is one of those deals where I would go, what are we even talking about? If you leave them out, you're crazy. Or if you put them in, you're crazy. I mean, they're right there. I mean, it's... I could tell you all the good stuff, and then I could turn around and tell you all the bad stuff. I will start here, though. They're 26 in the net right now. I'm assuming that's going to drop tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Okay, but it ain't going to drop far, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trivia time. Net rankings come out the Monday after Selection Sunday. What's the highest ranked net team highest on the day after best? Selection?
The best ranking? Highest.
Best.
Yeah.
The best ranking in the net on the day after Selection Sunday that has ever been left out of the NCAA tournament. Now, keep in mind, the net only goes back to the 2018-19 season, but we do have 5 years and four NCAA tournaments. Well, I guess it's now we have 5 years. This is the fifth year of it. 2020, we had the net, but we had no tournament. We haven't had this tournament yet, but you get the point.
Got it. I'll say the number is 32 and the team is, was it Wake a couple years ago?
Okay. First, I should rephrase. This is the sixth year of the net.
Okay. So this will be the fifth tournament with it.
This will be the fifth tournament okay. with the net rankings. The highest, the best ranked team to ever get left out, ranking based on day after Selection Sunday. So everything's in.
Yep.
33, NC State.
Oh, 32. Oh, I remember NC State 32.
In 2019. If you want it, 2019, the best team left out according to the net, number 33, NC State. 2020, no tournament. Pandemic. That was something.
Yeah.
2021, number 42, Penn State. 2022, number 39, Oklahoma. Last season, number 38, North Texas. No team in the top 32 of the net on the day after Selection Sunday has ever been left out of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it is. And I'm for our listeners, not for Paris, because we are still in a shallow sample size.
Of course. And so, let me be clear. That doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't.
Yeah. You can be, it can always be true. No team ranked here has ever been left out until it is. And then we'll just use them as the bar next time.
Yeah. And just a reminder, as people get more dialed in on this, your net number doesn't mean as much as your opponent's net number and your record versus the quadrants. It's a sorting system and power metric ranking, you know, just.
Yeah. I'm not even trying to tell you it means.
It's always net all there all the time. Just keep in mind other metrics mean more. The net is literally a sorting tool for all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Like, I'm not even telling you that this means Indiana State has to be in. I'm just telling you the number they're going to have next to their name in the net on the day after Selection Sunday is going to put them in a position, I believe, where they can say, hey, nobody like us has ever been left out before. And then we'll see. The body of work, 5-5 in the first two quadrants. They only have one quadrant, one win, and it's a win over Bradley. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not great. They only have two losses outside of quadrant one. That's good. But one of them is a Q4 loss to Illinois State. That's terrible. They were a 17.5-point favorite in that game and lost it by 13. If not for that, they're in no problem. We're not even having this conversation. Which is a reminder, every game matters. Even the ridiculous game you're playing as a 17.5-point favorite on a Wednesday in December. Like, one bad loss can really put you in a bad spot. And Indiana State is there right now. 26 of the net. They've been in the top 35 of the net all season. How about that? Since the net first published this season on day one,
yeah,
they've never gone lower than 35. 34th in strength of record. All that stuff's good. They went 1-2 against Drake. That's not good. They're 1-4 against likely NCAA tournament teams. They have losses to Alabama and Michigan State. None of that is great. I guess I'd bottom line it this way. If you made me build a bracket today, right now, I would put them in it. They might be a first four team, but I would have them in. My fear for them is that you know what it's like when you're in the clubhouse with this kind of body of work.
People are just passing you all week.
The bubble shrinks.
The clubhouse quandary. Let's, right now. You are done. You are done. And you got to wait and watch a lot of people come stroll up to that 18th green, and they got a chance to pass you.
That's right. I mean, you get they got birdie holes coming up, and you're just sitting there watching them. So, like, here's the deal. If I had to build a bracket for tomorrow, I'd put them in. But then South Florida goes and wins the AAC tournament, or Memphis goes and wins the AAC tournament. All right. Now the bubble has shrunk. Oh, and here comes Wake Forest. They're in the ACC championship game. Now they just flew by you. I'm worried that will happen to them. I think they should be in. I think they're good enough to advance if they are in. I think they're going to be sweating until they get the name call.
And although you get into a tricky spot if you start comparing this team in the same conference this year. So I'm not explicitly saying this. I will say this, though. Drake was in this position a couple of years ago, and it had to wait, and it got in. So if you're an Indiana State fan, or if you're just rooting for this, the committee won't take that into account. At least it damn well shouldn't. Every season is a universe unto itself. But we have seen instances where teams have had to sit for 5 or 6 days. Other teams have been able to pick up wins, and they've still been able to cling and hold on. We'll see on that. GP, we are
okay. Let's just do prediction right now. Just prediction. Indiana State on Selection Sunday, in or out?
If they made the bracket tonight, I think it's in. I'm going to predict it is out next Sunday.
If they made the bracket tonight, they would be in. I'm going to predict they're going to be in.
Okay. I like that we're getting a little bit of optimism on the pod.
I'm going to predict it holds up and the Sycamores hear their name called next Sunday.
I'll tell you what, and we'll segue this right into the bubble winners and losers. Imagine if it was Indiana State, Michigan State playing in the first four, you know, a rematch of the.
It'd be fabulous.
They played this season for the first time since they met for the first time since.
A random thing the other day, like one of the local rock stations in Memphis, like posted on Facebook just very quickly. Joe posted on Facebook. Hey, it's just one of those things where you're trying to get engagement, you know, and it's like, hey, what's the worst concert you've ever been to? And like the overwhelming majority of answers from Memphians was Smashing Pumpkins. They were like, Billy Corgan came out and he said, this crowd sucked. And he was just like, it was apparently like the worst, awful. The mix was bad. I just had no idea that Memphians hate Smashing Pumpkins.
Neither did I, but good to know. 1979, Michigan State played Indiana State. They had not played each other since until literally this season. Michigan State won. They wouldn't put them in a rematch in the first four. But if they could somehow meet, that
what
would
mean
be
they wouldn't.
Now, they non-conference opponents, if they could, and it was the bracket principles.
Is there a principle against that?
In the other game versus they wouldn't have this.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, just send them both to the first four. It's fine with me.
That would be something. Okay, actually, let's do good bubble. And there's not a lot. In fact, I only have two good bubble results from the entire weekend. And it's Wake Forest getting the job done over Clemson, 81-76, get to 19-12. The problem for Wake is this, and we are going to, if you're watching on YouTube, we're going to show you the league brackets here in a few minutes. Wake Forest has to play the Notre Dame Georgia Tech winner, which does nothing for you. And then it plays Pitt, which will get a little for you, but I don't know if it's enough. So the question will become with Wake is, would the two wins be enough? Because a third against Carolina would definitely be enough. Very, very tricky team there. We'll see. The other bubble winner is Colorado, which won at Oregon State, so it sweeps the Oregon trip. And if it's going to Dayton still, I think it's got the best resume of any team that's still going to Dayton. It's on a 6-game win streak and is the 3 seed in the Pac-12 tournament. Parrish, those are the only two good bubble results, unless you're about to give me someone else that I completely missed from the weekend.
No, I mean, Colorado's obviously playing really well right now. Like you mentioned, 6 straight wins. I think Jerry Palm had them in on Sunday morning.
Yeah, yeah, they were in. They were in after he had them in after they won against Oregon, and then they just didn't slip up. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they go 73-57 over Oregon State. I think they're going to get there. I think at the very least, the Pac-12 is going to have three with Arizona, Washington State, and I think Colorado's going to join them.
I agree. We got a lot of bubble losers here. I'll roll through all of them. Take it where you want after, but let me just let me tour around because there is a ton. Okay, Indiana beats Michigan State by 1 point on Sunday on CBS. Sparty is 18-13, probably 10 seed material at best. But Michigan State, you're testing our patience. And in fact, it was a weird thing with Indiana State not getting in today, and then Michigan State like losing again. People saying, "I don't want to see these 13-14 loss high major teams in the tournament," and then invoking the 79 game. Obviously, Iowa had its chance, and it got down like 23-5 at home against Illinois, lost 73-61. Hawkeyes weren't in the field. Now they're even further behind. They got a lot coming to them. Now let's go to what happened on Saturday. Creighton wins 69-67 at Nova. Dude, the game was like 28-3. Nova came back. Trey Alexander hit a game-winning shot with 0.2 seconds remaining. Villanova's got to win at least two in the Garden. I said this on HQ. If you aren't aware, if you know you're trying to keep a track of this bubble thing, here's the deal with Nova right now. Nova is a 17-14 team. Loss volume and win total has to matter. The record is 15 losses for any at-large team ever. Trivia time, give me one of them. You got it, GP?
Georgia.
Georgia might be the worst win percentage. You might be right. Vandy had 15. I'll look at Georgia right now because I don't want to keep moving on here. Hold on 1 second. Georgia.
The Dennis Felton team that won the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Oh, but that's it. You're talking at large.
I'm talking at large.
Yeah, I got you.
Georgia got in as a 14-loss team in 01. So 15 was Vandy, and there's another one that I'm not recalling.
That's what I was thinking of.
My point is this. Nova fans, I know you got to win games. I almost wonder if you got to make the Big East title game. So keep that in mind. You had a chance on your home floor and you made a big push. It wasn't enough. Providence also gets out to, it was the inverse, man. Providence is up big on UConn early. UConn comes back, storms. I mean, forget about it. Providence led 15-2. UConn went on a 40-9 run to end the first half, man. Just outrageous. 74-60. Providence is way off. It's going to need to get to the Big East title game minimally. We'll see you there. Couple teams that I think are going to get in, but took losses, and their footing isn't that solid. So the seeding situation could be tricky. TCU loses at home to UCF by two. TCU,
that was dumb.
TCU is 7-11 in the top two quadrants. It has a 3-23 non-con strength of schedule. That is atrocious. Now, this was the first loss it had all season outside of quad one, but you want to talk about a team that's getting all these Q1 opportunities and failing time and time and time again. I think it was 2-10 in quad one before the net refreshed overnight, so it actually gained two wins, but I'd be... don't lose a game in the Big 12 tournament. That's all I'm saying. Oklahoma probably going to make it, but it lost against Texas there. Oklahoma's lost five of his past seven games. And it also, the resume is not super inspiring. So losses there, a couple more, then it's all UGP. Mississippi State's another team from a high major. Let's maybe just stop, take a look around, and check under the hood here. Four-game losing streak. Mississippi State right now, I had it before. Let me bring this up. Mississippi State's resume is right now, because it's right around TCU and Oklahoma in the net rankings. All right. It's 4-8 in Q1, 3-3 in Q2. So we have another team that is multiple games under 500 in the top two quadrants, 7-11, and it has a Q4 loss, does Mississippi State. You had a big opportunity here to for sure lock it up. You missed your chance there. Don't lose a game in the SEC tournament. New Mexico could not get it done against Utah State. Lobos right on the cut line there. Between this and Boise State, every damn night with this league, I can't get enough of it. Utah State wins the Mountain West outright for the first time in program history in Danny Sprinkle's first year. Darius Brown was awesome. He hit the three that got him the lead with 5 seconds to go. That was awesome stuff from Darius Brown. But New Mexico could not pull it out on the road. Little weird situation at the end where Jalen House tried to miss a foul shot intentionally, didn't hit the rim. They wouldn't have gotten the ball anyway, but students were on the floor before time was over, and here we go again. And then Utah got swept in the Oregon trip. Get them out of here. South Florida lost to Tulsa. No at-large case. Get them out of here. Those are your bubble losers. What are your takeaways?
We were out of town this weekend and settled in. And, you know, the kid falls asleep and it's like, all right, Utah State, New Mexico, like let's settle in on this one. What a fabulous basketball game that was. Just the crowd, the scene, everything. The playmaking, the shot making down the stretch. Like, if you were trying to make a commercial to be like, hey, these guys on the podcast aren't crazy. The Mountain West really is fun this year. Like, that's just use that game. It was awesome.
As coincidence would have it, the Mountain West having a great season will be the lead item of Tuesday's Court Report, the final one of the season. So, yes.
How about that? How about that? Can't wait for that.
Here we go.
Can't wait for that. And so, you know, just, you know, ultimately, I think the National Coach of the Year thing is going to come down to Kelvin, Matt, Dan. And you could honestly vote them in any order. It's totally reasonable.
Kelvin, Matt, Dan? You mean Kelvin, Dan, Danny? Or Kelvin, Danny, Danny?
No, I think it's Kelvin Sampson, Matt Painter.
Matt Painter.
And Dan Hurley. And I really don't know how you pick between them.
Okay.
You don't think those three should be 1, 2, and 3 in some order? I mean, they have been excellent and separated from the rest of the sport.
They're there. Danny Sprinkle took over a program without a returning player and won the Mountain West that is going to send at least 5 to the tournament. He is at the table with them, in my opinion.
Okay, that's fair.
Champions of the Mountain West, and that league is that league could send more teams to the tournament than Danny Hurley's league. So I would put him there. Yeah,
totally fair. Okay, I'll do that. And then the other one I would put in there is Amir Abdur-Rahim. At South Florida. I just throw him in there as a conference champion. You're never supposed to be a conference champion at South Florida. I mean, I say this respectfully, but like that's never supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And he's responsible for that. So I would, those five, those are my, that, if I had to put a 5-person ballot together right now, that would be my 5. And Danny, I guess this was my point. Danny would definitely be on that list of 5. He's been awesome and sounds like he might have some big decisions to make soon.
He's a rumored candidate for Washington. We'll see if that comes to pass. His dad played football there. Keep that in mind before we take the break, and we need to take our break here. Just with all the teams I mentioned right now, like around the cut line, I think you've got Mississippi State, Seton Hall, Virginia. Actually, if you want to say Virginia was on the bubble, they actually got a win. So I didn't include them as a winner before. So they're worthy of inclusion. St. John's, they got a win, but they beat Georgetown. What do you want from me? Indiana State, New Mexico, Nova on the other side of it, Providence on the other side of it. Again, this will get more clarity later into the week, but at least I wanted to touch on a lot of those bubble results. We have brackets to give you, and we have games to preview. So unless you got anything else, well, actually, you know what? I take that back. I don't want to just do bubble stuff real quick. Houston destroys Kansas.
Yes.
Okay, so four results real quick. Houston destroys Kansas, take it where you want. Texas Tech beats Baylor, which was like kind of surprising. Texas Tech is the 4 seed in the Big 12. Iowa State randomly going down at K-State, just kind of like, hey, what's going on? And then I watched all of FAU Memphis as well, and that was really impressive by FAU. The Kansas-Houston one's the biggest game I guess we haven't talked about yet. Hunter Dickinson waiting news on his MRI with his shoulder. It's all yours, GP. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Self's quote after the loss was exactly right. Like, hey, man, you tell me we got our starting five and I'll go play with anybody. We can play anybody, but that's not what we have right now. And, you know, McCullough's just been limping around for a long time now. I'm just starting to think this is just going to be his season, right? He's just going to be limping through the rest of the season.
It's a major problem. Now, we don't know. It is. And honestly, if you're a Kansas fan, do you want any of these guys in the tournament, in the Big 12 tournament? Would you rather just, you know... I mentioned this.
That's interesting. Would you just, if you're Bill Self, do you just bench Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson and say, hey, put us in the tournament next Thursday or Friday and we'll play then? But basically, my guys are going to have 2 weeks off.
Something to be
said. I really might do that. Who cares? How much can you improve your seed by winning the Big 12 tournament as opposed to?
You can't. That's the thing.
I know you can.
With Kansas Parish, I actually think there's a 2-seed line difference. I think it's a difference between a 2 and a 4. So tell me what you'd rather be.
Yeah. A 2-seed with Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough still not feeling great, or a 4-seed with them feeling better than they otherwise would feel.
Look at that.
Give me the 4-seed and a healthy guys.
Yeah, probably, but matchups matter, and I'm a firm believer in you'd rather be the 2-seed.
Yeah, but for Kansas, like the whole matchup, for Kansas, it's like Final Four. Like Kansas ain't celebrating Elite Eights. It's Final Four is a national championship.
I know. So we wait on a news update with Dickinson coming on Monday there. But before he got hurt, man, Houston was just dominating. It was, come on, man. Like Jamal Shedd, 13 points, 8 assists, 6 boards. This was the third largest loss in the Bill Self era and its largest loss ever versus a Big 12 team. Only Kansas getting 46, second fewest points in a game under Bill Self, the fewest was a 72-40 loss to number one Kentucky back in November of 2014 at the Champions Classic there. Houston, what do you want from me? Like that just, I said on HQ Saturday night, to me, Houston should be the favorite to win the national championship. You said at the top of the show that the betting markets have UConn. To me right now, after what I saw here, and I'm not saying it's a major gap, I'm saying it's very narrow. This team has rated as the best. And when I saw what it did to Kansas, it was just like, you want to talk about a team that was just pissed off, ready, perfectly executed. That was an incredible performance by them. I could not be more impressed than what I saw with Houston on Saturday.
Did you get any explanation on, there was, seemed like Bill and Kelvin stopped each other in the handshake line.
I saw that. I don't know what that's about. I mean, sometimes those things will actually mean something. And sometimes it's like the most random thing you've ever heard in your life, but right. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah. I just noticed it. Like on one hand, Kansas losing by 30 is like crazy. But like, remember, it was just a few weeks ago under similar circumstances, they lost by nearly 30. They don't have any players. And I know this, like last time I said this, people were like, it's Kansas. They can recruit, like every person on the Kansas roster is a higher rated recruit than anybody at Utah State. So what are we talking about? Like, I hear you, but like, take your recruiting rankings and set them over here. Let's just talk about useful basketball players right now. They have like five. And two of them are hurt. All right. And last time, the Texas Tech game, I believe it was McCullough out and DeJuan Harris hobbled. Mm. And they just got blasted. And now it's McCullough can't play the second half. Dickinson has to leave. And they just get slaughtered. They don't have play. They're not a good basketball team shorthanded. Like they don't have 10 reliable guys or even 8 reliable guys. When they lose a guy, like when Kentucky loses a guy, they go, okay, we got 7 other guys that could maybe do that job. Let's go with one of them. When Kansas loses a guy, it's like, all right, well, we'll throw somebody else out there, but we're basically playing with 4 now. It's real hard.
Yeah. No, it's they're a bit of a 3-legged dog when it comes to that. That's unfortunate. But we'll see what they can do. And what they decide to do with the Big 12 tournament. Speaking of that, let's give our viewers a look at the brackets because they have every major conference. And you know what? Toss the Mountain West in there because it's played like one this season. They're all available. We'll tour through them quickly, maybe pick a winner, and then we'll set up the auto bids coming on Monday and Tuesday night. But first, I might as well do it. Nada, we need a word from our partners.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, Deadleg, run us through these brackets, and I'll just pick winners.
Nada, this is alphabetical order. Toss them up on the screen. I think that means ACC is first. So here's your ACC bracket. You got Carolina. I'm going to talk these through for our audio audience, obviously. Carolina's the 1. Duke is the 2. Virginia's the 3. Pitt is the 4. Clemson, which is going to the tournament, the NCAA one, it's the 6. Wake Forest is the 5. Did you see before we picked this? I had a couple phone calls, but I had the game on. East Tennessee State beat Chattanooga, and Brooke Savage coaches ETSU, and he was an assistant there for a long time under Steve Forbes. Forbes went to the game. Like they showed him at the end. He was like just chilling there. I was like, okay, awesome. I love to see that. I didn't, frankly, these guys have busy schedules, but he's got a little time here. But it was cool to see him, Forbes, actually go back and check that out. I don't know
if Brooks was like a student assistant. Like I've known Brooks since he was not technically a kid, but very young because he was with, I think he was with those guys at Tennessee, like with, and so Forbes and Brooks go back forever. They're not just people who used to work together. They're very close. So it's nice to see him supporting him in that way. And Forbes still does care deeply about East Tennessee State. You know, you got to leave there when the Power Conference job calls, but he still cares about that place.
He had a team in 2020 and we wouldn't have a tournament. By the way, I think it's 4-year anniversary tomorrow of this all stuff going down. Shudder. But that East ETSU team that Forbes had, it would have been a prime Cinderella candidate. Okay, ACC bracket again. Carolina 1, Duke 2, Virginia 3, Pitt 4, Wake 5, Clemson 6. This stuff gets going. Friends and family only Saturday. I'm not going into that deep. If you can see the bracket here, go ahead, Parrish. Who's going to win this thing?
I think earlier I said North Carolina is going to win out and be the fourth number one seed. So I guess I have to stick with that, right?
That is correct. I think
otherwise
you do.
I would be hypocritical.
Okay. I will go. I'll go Duke. Give me Duke. Duke avenges and gets the win and they get it done. What is next? Big 10, I believe, in which came out. There it is. Here we go. Big 10. Your one is obviously Purdue. Congrats to Zach Edey. They put his number in the rafters at Mackey. I think that was a surprise to him and his family, which is pretty awesome. Obviously, well-deserved. I don't know if they had ever... Purdue honks, if you know your stuff. I don't know if that had ever happened to a player ever before where that honor actually came while the player was active at a game in a season.
It feels like there was one within the past 10 years.
At Purdue?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Feels like there was one where they literally... either retired it final, like on senior day, or they announced they were retiring it on senior day, something like that.
Okay. They might be right. I don't know, but I saw it there and I thought it was pretty awesome. Illinois is the 2. Nebraska is the 3.
Look at that.
Nebraska, for only the second time in the past 50 years, won 12 conference games. Nebraska's going to the tournament. I'll wax on this at least one more time between now and the start of the first round. I love, 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 love the fact that we have Nebraska, Northwestern, South Carolina, Washington State. Who else am I missing? Teams that are almost never in the tournament are all making it the same year. I think that's tremendous stuff. Nebraska's the 3, Northwestern's the 4. We might live another 40 years and not see Northwestern and Nebraska in getting double byes to the Big Ten tournament. Your 5, who is your 5? Wisconsin. Yes, Wisconsin. Indiana's the 6. Iowa's the 7. Michigan State is the 8. Michigan State has an 8-9er on Thursday against Minnesota. Can it lose to Minnesota and still make the tournament? It's going to be.
I wouldn't advise that.
I would not. And you know what? Minnesota, those Gophers, they're a little bit slippery. You might want to keep an eye on it there. So I will take, I'll go first this time. I will go, how's this going to go? Is Purdue going to lose 0-1 or 2 more games for this season? I'll take Illinois to win the Big Ten tournament. That's 2 non-1 seeds for me to start. And that's not by design. I'm just picking this in real time.
I'm obligated to pick Purdue. I know. I'm a boulder maker at this point in my life.
You're Purdue Parrish. That's what you are.
For Michigan State, I really do think it's you beat Minnesota and you're in. Lose to Minnesota and, buddy, you got to sit over there and sweat with Indiana State.
Yeah. Wouldn't that
because
be
if you beat Minnesota, that's not great. But like then it sets you up where the only thing that can happen to you is either a win over Purdue, woohoo, or a loss to Purdue. Who cares? Right?
Yeah, that's true. You know what? I said alphabetical order. I think we jump Big East. Nada, if you have Big East, if you have the Big East, bring up the Big East. There we go. Nice looking graphic here. Your 1 is UConn. Your 2 is Creighton. 3 is Marquette. Holy crap, the Garden on Thursday for this second tip. Seton Hall is your 4 and St. John's is your 5. So it's not just that both those teams are dancing right on the bubble cut line. It's that they're both local fan bases. Oh my goodness! I cannot wait for that game. So those are your 4-5. Villanova is your 6. Providence is your 7. UConn will play the winner of Butler in the 8-9 game. Dude, chills on my arms getting ready for this Thursday quarterfinal setup there. Afternoon to deep into the night. I'll go first, and then you can go first for the next one. I will take... Do I keep up the bit here? We've had 1 seeds go down all around the country in these mid-major ones. Why the hell not? Put it on. You know, clip it. Share it. Dan Hurley, go ahead. I'll take Creighton to beat UConn in the Big East title game.
That's disrespectful. That is wildly disrespectful.
No, we're not going to have... like all these 1 seeds aren't going to win. I'm just saying...
There are 3 teams that have separated from the rest of the pack, and you're trying to throw them right back in there with the pack.
It's Garden. It's Big East. It's anything can happen.
I am taking UConn.
You know what? I'll take it back. I do. I'm taking UConn.
Okay.
I cannot take it. They've been so good.
They're so much better than everybody else in the league.
4 Big East championship games and not won it. I can't. I can see it happening. I gotta walk it back.
I'm taking UConn. Let's use this now too.
UConn's gonna win the Big East tournament.
UConn's gonna win the Big East tournament. Clip that back to back.
Yeah.
Go UConn. Can we take a moment here?
Yeah, take a moment.
I do not like that they're calling these home games for St. John's. They're not home games. This is outrageous. This is actually like a decision where people put thought into it and they just reached the wrong conclusion. Tell me why people reached the wrong conclusion on this.
I can't tell you why.
I can't tell you why.
What band is that? Poorly Sung.
The Eagles again.
There we go.
Why are you singing the Eagles nonstop and then getting mad when I bring up Smashing Pumpkins after you brought up Smashing Pumpkins?
You said it. Okay. All right. All right. Anyway, I don't know why they gave this designation. It's not going to be a home crowd for St. John's. They're going to have a lot of people in the building, but because what? They're more familiar with the traffic route from home to the building.
Yeah, like, they know how to operate the subway system better.
You're going to go down 7th and you're going to wait. And if you got a red light there, then you're going to wait and you're going to go down another one and you want to go down 5th Avenue and that's how you get there. And that's why it's a home game for St. John's. What do you want from me? I'm walking here.
No. Okay. Tell me, like, first off, put a name on it. Who decided this?
I don't know. Dude, I have no idea.
Like, find out who decided this, and then let's chastise them by name. Because this is outrageous. Hey, whoever you are who decided this, do St. John's fans have first opportunity to buy every ticket for every St. John's game? If not, it's not a home game. Okay? It's not a home game when other people's fans can buy tickets the same way your fans can buy tickets. And this really does matter because if you get into
it actually has implications. I agree.
Okay, so we're gonna
BT and Hall, they're getting into the tournament, but I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So like if this is gonna be considered a home game, if they play somebody and I haven't even looked at it, but let's say they played the team that's ranked 35th in the net. All right. If this were a neutral court game, which it is, it would be a quadrant one win for St. John's. But given that they're now being told your Big East tournament games are home games, that win over the team 35th in the net would be a quadrant two win for them.
Oh, boy.
Because only 1 through 30 at home is quadrant one. Like, that's not right. It's a thing. This is the thing that frustrates me more than anything. Because, like, when you talk about people's complaints with the quadrant system and the net. Well, we're all living through this for the first time, and I've got some issues. I think the quadrants are too big. I don't think beating Houston and beating the team that's ranked 75th on the road should both fall in the same quadrant. That seems stupid to me.
Well, just so we're clear, they do actually on their team sheets when they do this, those upper tier quad ones have a separate designation. So.
I know, but this is also true. If you beat Houston yesterday, you recorded a quadrant one victory. And if you beat Samford today out on the road, if you won at Samford,
absolutely, that's a quad one win.
Or UC Irvine.
There we go.
Or Xavier, or you know, like, or Bradley. You know, we can agree with all due respect to Bradley and everybody else. We can agree beating Houston and beating Bradley should not both be in the same quadrant. So I got my own issues, but that's something like we're still trying to figure it out. This one is just like somebody said, hey, let's talk about this whole St. John's, Madison Square Garden, Big East tournament thing. Should there be home games for St. John's? And somebody who has power in this sport actually said, yes, they should be considered home games. And that is so ridiculously wrong. It's like, it has no impact on my life. I don't really care. I just find it so wrong that it's infuriating.
I got you. We're more than an hour on the podcast. I don't disagree with you. Let's go to the Big 12. Nada, I think you got that up. The Big 12 bracket here. Can we pinch in just a little bit? The typeface here is tiny. Your one seed is Houston, obviously. Your two, Nada, can you literally pinch in? Maybe he can't. Your two is Iowa State or the Baylor, the two? I honestly don't
know. The guy complaining we're running too long on the podcast is throwing up graphics that nobody can read.
The other ones have been the Big 12 putting this on a black background is also problematic here. I'm bringing it up right now. I got it. I got it here on my own. Okay, two is Iowa State. Three is Baylor. Four is Texas Tech. BYU is your five. The idea we got Kansas as a six seed in the Big 12 tournament. Never thought I'd live to see the day. You go first. Who's winning this?
Houston.
Can you? I dare you to not pick a one seed once.
Well, now 100% not happening. Houston wins the Big 12.
Give me Baylor. I'll go Baylor. I'll shift off, even though I'm a big believer in Kelvin Sampson in Houston. I will go with Baylor beating a hobbled Kansas team, outrunning Iowa State, and then, and getting hot, flame throwing, getting it done in Kansas City over against Houston. That's my pick there. Next up in the queue, I think it's Mountain West. I think we got it. Look at this Mountain West bracket. Utah State's your one. Nevada is your two. Don't call them Nevada. Boise State's your three. Vegas is your four. San Diego State's your five. New Mexico, six. And Colorado State, which is a lock for the tournament, is the seventh seed in this bracket. As we told you on a recent episode, all of these teams are within 5 percentage points chance to win the whole damn thing. You go first.
Utah State.
Come on. Hey, listen, this isn't a bit. Can you pick a non-one seed, please?
That's like I am basically if I ever renounce my status as a Boilermaker, I am going to pledge allegiance to the Aggies. If I ever decide I don't want to be a Boilermaker anymore, I'm going to become a Utah State Aggie. I'm basically an Aggie. I'm like part Aggie now.
All right. I will go, man.
If I were going to have another son, I would name him Great Ossabor Parish.
Did you see the shot Max Rice tossed up on Friday night at San Diego State?
No, I don't think I saw anything on Friday night.
Okay.
Oh, of course I did. Yes, the 40-footer.
The 40-footer. Goodbye.
Yes.
Crazy.
And did you see Leon after the game? He was like, listen, I watch you make those shots all the time. You know, shooters.
Crazy shot, man.
He was, because they asked him, like, was that crazy? And he was like, I mean, I'm his dad. I've been watching him make these shots. Like, good shooters have a better chance than bad shooters. So, like, he basically said, I'll live with that. But that was also awesome. And I sort of used the top 25 and one on Saturday morning to be like, hey, Danny Sprinkle's your Mountain West Coach of the Year, as he should be. But Leon Rice is about to take Boise State to the NCAA tournament for the third straight year. Guess who's ever done that?
No one.
No one. It's just Leon. He's been tremendous too.
By the way, I'm going to fight back on the idea that you're going to name a child Great Ossabor Parish, because there's no chance you'd ever have your son's initials be GOP. No chance.
Oh my.
Let's go to the SEC.
We're not doing that.
Let's go to the SEC. SEC bracket right here. Number one is Tennessee. Number two is Kentucky. Number three is Alabama. Number four is Auburn. Your five seed. Yeah, it wound up being South Carolina. That puts Florida on the sixth line. A&M on the seven, and Mississippi State is your nine, and yet it is in the field right now. I will go first, and I'm going to pull a GP. I will take Tennessee.
Okay.
Come on.
You ready for this?
Let's go.
I'm going to take Kentucky.
Ooh, okay, there we go. The two Kentucky. Seed pairing.
Kentucky.
All right, I like it. All right, Kentucky. This is going down in Nashville as usual. First round gets going on Tuesday.
And they should make these home games for Kentucky, given what Big Blue Nation is going to do to Bridgestone Arena.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah,
they do always have a crowd advantage in these things, and I suspect that they will here too.
One more to go. Pac-12, the final iteration of the Pac-12 as we know it. Arizona is your one. Wazoo is your two. Colorado is your three. Oregon is your four. UCLA, UCLA, how about that? That's your five. Utah is your six. And then Cal. Good job by Mark Madsen getting the seven seed out of there. It's hard not to pick the Wildcats. I haven't decided yet. You go.
Washington State.
Oh, okay.
What if Washington State beats Arizona three times in the same season?
I know. I'll go Colorado. They've got enough talent to do it, and I'll say that that Colorado and Washington State play a tremendous semifinal on Friday. But I will go Tad Boyle's team. Cody Williams, KJ Simpson come up huge. That's a very tasty, tempting three seed for the Pac-12. So that's your major conference tournament bracket. Obviously, when we reconvene on Wednesday, we'll preview more as need be. Parrish will probably want to open the show on St. John's getting screwed over home court advantage. and I don't disagree. Let's quickly turn ahead to Monday and Tuesday. I have the games. Do you want to read them? Do you have them? Do you want me to read them? What do you want to do here?
I might take too long, so you should probably do it.
Okay. All right. WCC semis going down Monday night in Vegas. Two auto bids on the line. Got the Sun Belt, Arkansas State against James Madison. Arkansas State beat App State on a buzzer beater on Sunday. So that's another one seed that is out of its conference tournament. James Madison trying to get into the field as what, a 31 win team here. Although actually, did I jump the gun? Chat, get me in real time. Did JMU win? Correct me in real time, because I had that in brackets just in case. The other auto bid is ETSU versus Samford for the SoCon. Bucky Ball versus Brooke Savage and ETSU. So that's a big one. So we get two more coming on Monday night. James Madison did win. It will play against Arkansas State Tuesday. Five more bids coming. CBS Sports Network is going to have your CAA title game. Matchups are to be determined at the taping of this pod right now. Also at 7 Eastern, ESPN will be the Horizon title game. Also at 7 Eastern, the NEC title game will be Wagner against Merrimack. 9 Eastern, WCC Championship, ESPN. And then 9:30, CBS Sports Network, your Summit League title game. We got four in now. We'll have six on Monday. We'll have 11 teams in the field by the time we pod again on Wednesday morning.
Woo, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, man.
Hey, and I will be home.
Ooh.
On Wednesday morning.
9 a.m. podcast on a Wednesday?
You want to do a 9 a.m. on a Wednesday? Yeah, let's do it.
Why not?
Let's do it.
We can get into it 9 a.m. on a Wednesday.
9 a.m. Eastern on a Wednesday.
Hey, listen, just to show you I'm not so eager to get off this show, your kiddo was in a baseball tournament. Did he win?
We finished second.
Ah, that's why. That's why he was. That's why Paris was a little frosty kicking off the show.
We went 2-0 yesterday and 2-1 today. Lost in the championship game, but the little guys played hard. It's fun. It's fun. We're like in this really intense 7-year-old baseball world now. It is not the world I ever thought I'd be in, but it's just fun watching your little guy be like he loves it and he competes in it, and you know they're playing. It's fun. It's been fun. But buddy, it'll eat up your weekends.
Yeah, no, that I know. That's
and this is the last weekend that I'm going to be home until after the Final Four, and I'm already gone Monday through Friday. Like I literally drop my kids off on Monday morning at school, and then I don't see them again until Friday morning, and really don't spend time with them again until Friday night for like months at a time now. Like it's not ideal. So I just try to make it a point. Like he's in a baseball tournament. We're going to do this as a family all weekend, and I'll know enough about basketball by the time Sunday night gets here.
Yeah, no, that's the move. I have my kids in once a week, just basketball practice stuff. And the younger one, they're on. So they go to this thing with the bike. I don't know. I want to say there's probably 80 or so kids doing this. And it's just like, you know, all-star camp and like learn to play, very basic stuff. But they're on the opposite end. So I'm kind of just trying to bounce back and forth. And sure enough, I leave the 5-year-old to himself for a minute. And he's come just running over like bawling. He's the only kid crying in the whole thing. I'm like, what is going on? What is going on? It was water break. You have my water. I'm like, I do have your water, dude. I'm so sorry. This happens, of course, 10 minutes previously. Like he's learning how to really dribble, but the ball he had was like, it had an inconsistent inflation to it. So he did it too hard. It hit him in the face. He started crying. I'm like, oh gosh, let's go. But he does love hoops. We got a hoop down in our den, and he's shooting at it all the time. So we're not at your level of intensity with that. This is just,
yeah, it's wild. It's a wild scene out there. The parents are crazier than the kid. The kids are great, but the parents can get a little wild sometimes.
Always doing it, don't they? Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but no, you'll run into like listeners of the podcast at these little baseball events. You know, it's the tournament we were in this weekend. It's most of the best 7-year-old teams from the Memphis area and like North Mississippi. So you'll have some people like hey, don't you have a podcast to do? I'm like, we're just as soon as this game's over, I'm getting home. I'm headed there now. So I appreciate you and Nada and the listeners being a little patient. I know we started a little later than normal on a Sunday night, and that was strictly because I was trying to be a father.
No, it's completely reasonable. And hey, listen, we had a good live audience here tuned in amid the Oscars. Don't even know. Do we know who? Someone spoil it for me right now. Did is it over? Did Oppenheimer win Best Picture? If anyone in the chat, you got like 30 seconds before we close this podcast. Or maybe Paris knows. I don't know.
I don't know who anybody who's won a single award tonight. That's how detached I am.
How about that? And normally when we do the show in years past, well, first of all, it doesn't ever feel like the Oscars are this late into
No. You know what it is? Because I've had this feeling. I vividly remember the Will Smith slap. I was in New York.
Yes.
And I'm home now. So something's off with the calendar. I think it's the Final Four. It's like a week deeper than it typically
is. It is, but it usually doesn't feel like it feels like the Oscars are always like mid to late February. Real-time
update. Like the Oscars should be maybe next week.
No. I think they should be early. They're usually in February, aren't they? This is amazing.
I don't know. I just know that the Will Smith slap, I was in New York, and the only reason I would have been in New York on a Sunday night.
Oh, okay. Good call.
First election Sunday or championship week or something like that.
That's a good call there. So, all right. Good deal. I think that's a show.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigua. He's a legend. Shouts to Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening and watching the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. So do that. We will talk to you again 9 a.m. Eastern on Wednesday. Till then, take care.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.